Hey everybody, it's Nick here again from the GrayscaleGorilla.com podcast. And in today's episode, Chris and Chad and I talk about mentors, motivation, and things you could do to get better at your job every day. Now, before we get into today's discussion, I wanted to let you guys know that we have t-shirts for sale right now. This is only the second time we've printed t-shirts. So if you've missed the batch, the first batch we did a few years ago, now's a good time to head on in before February 6th and get your order in for the second limited edition Grayscale Gorilla t-shirt. They come in two different colors, got a really cool red color and black. And we also are doing hoodies this time as well. So if you ever wanted to wear the logo around, show off to your friends and make your other friends a little bit confused, now's the time to do it. Make sure you head on over before February 6th. I'll put the link down below if you're watching on YouTube. And if you're listening to this, just head on over to our website where we post these podcasts over in the blog, and you'll see some show notes there as well. So we hope to see you walking around in your Grayscale Gorilla t-shirt by the time NAB rolls around. All right. With that, let's head on into today's podcast. I had a really fun time with Chris and Chad talking about this one. It was really one of my favorites. So I'll stop talking and let's head on in and join the podcast right now.
Well, hello, guys. Happy Monday to you, Chris Schmidt. How are you doing there, buddy?
Happy Monday. I'm doing well.
And,
I'm doing well, and I've got an awesome little Lego robot I built.
Holy crap. How many?
Actually, he's a pretty big Lego robot.
That's awesome.
Is that all bendable?
I sort of counted. I think I built 34 points of articulation into this guy. So he's very, very poseable. And he's not done yet. This is kind of like the skeleton, and I've just started like adding in all these tan pieces to make him look cool.
Get some armor going.
Yeah, it's got to have some guns.
Chad, Ashley, how's your Lego collection going?
I didn't do any Lego this weekend. We had birthday parties and other things going on, so I slacked. I take that back. I think on Friday I started one, and then I didn't finish it. And by the time all these parties happened, we had a lot of kids in the house, and so all of it got trashed. So I got to start over.
You don't have a high shelf for the adult Lego projects go?
I do, but I don't have that many yet, and I just bring them into my office because that's where, no kids are allowed. So maybe next weekend.
Your dog's going to eat them then. Yeah,
he's actually really good about that stuff. It doesn't really interest him that much. I think he'll get in the way. Like if I'm down on the floor doing Legos, he'll try to like be a part of it and like lay on me while I'm trying to do Legos or playing board games with the kids. Like he's just like all over it. But no, he's good at watching us do stuff. But doing well though. How are you?
Good. Monday's always fun. Always up early for some reason. I don't know why. I like sleep in sometimes on the weekend and I'm up. I just pop up out of nowhere at like 5 a.m. on Mondays. And
a superpower.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I didn't plan it, but I'm kind of glad it happens because I get a little leg up on the week. We got our podcast here, and then right before the podcast, we have a weekly meeting with the company. So I don't know. My brain is kind of spinning on Mondays. Try to get a lot done, and so yeah, pretty good. Already had too much coffee, so I'm into the water at this point.
Do you ever drink hot coffee or is it always iced coffee?
It's almost always iced coffee. Even in the winter, definitely in the summer, and it's almost always iced coffee. Sometimes if it's a cozy day, like a snuggly rainy Sunday, I'll have a hot cup of coffee. And sometimes I'll make a French press just like carry them like a thermos around with a French press in it all day. But man, it's more rare and rare as I age. I don't know what it is. I just love my iced coffee.
I always find I love iced coffee too, but in the wintertime, I feel like it drops my body temperature down if I'm drinking a lot of cold beverages. And as you can see, like I'm sensitive to cold. It might be the fact that all my body heat just escapes through my head, which is true. A lot of your body heat does escape through your head. So if you don't have hair, it gets cold. But yeah, man, I like iced coffee in the summer. It's awesome. And I wish there were more since, I don't work downtown anymore. Like the only kind of coffee that you can get that's, sort of decent is Starbucks. And like, I miss like Botrus and Intelligentsia and like all these, you know, little crafty coffee places downtown Chicago. And it's, I miss those, man. And
we got to get you. Have you tried a toddy? Have you tried making your own iced coffee?
No, we've never done that. We buy the jugs of the cold press and the iced coffee from the grocery store. Are those like the same or is it better?
They're probably better, actually, right? Those are getting really good lately. I've been using one called Chameleon, which is really good. And there's another one called Prospector's Brew or something like that. That's like a cold press concentrate that then you can make at home.
Right.
But I wanted to give you a little tip if you didn't know. You can heat that up and have one of the best hot cups of coffee you've ever had as well. So a lot of people that are sensitive with acid in their drinks will make it cold press, make their coffee cold brew, you know, 24 hours overnight, do the whole process, reduce it down, and then keep it in the fridge. And then they won't even drink it cold. They'll actually microwave it or, you know, heat it up somehow and drink it warm, but brewed cold press. And it's actually really a smooth cup of coffee. So
not bad.
If you're craving it, if you're craving that hot coffee. Yeah,
man, when we were in Portland, it was like you couldn't go a block without hitting an amazing coffee shop. And like there was Stumptown everywhere. And like you can get Stumptown cold brew. They almost like look like little bottles of Red Stripe beer, you know, like
these
like little tiny dark brown bottles. Oh my God. I must've drank about 10 of those when I was there. So good.
You're no coffee at all, right, Chris?
Correct. I did make a double batch of full power tea over the weekend though.
Oh, that's right. You've been making your own tea. How's that process going?
It's not hard. Just pile up a bunch of tea bags and do it. But they have like how much you want to make. And I cranked it up all the way. And I don't put ice in it. So it's like a pot of pure tea, not like watered down the way it should be. Mm-hmm. And I had a giant cup and I forgot to kind of water it down as I made it. So I had like pure, like concentrated tea and I was like bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, there's caffeine in that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's also good in the summertime, making some sun tea or just like, you know, nice iced tea.
I gotta say, the only reason I got into drinking iced tea at all is a couple of years ago, I decided to cut soda out from my diet entirely. But when you go out to a restaurant, you don't, I mean, you can, but like, I don't like just getting watered. So like, I like, you know, you get, every place almost always has iced tea. So a little iced tea with lemon, boom, magic. So I that super got me into tea because I don't drink soda really hardly at all. I probably have soda like twice a year.
Wow. Yeah, I it's hard to not drink soda when you're around it, you know, at a studio or whatnot. Like when I was at a studio, it was easy to drink two Cokes or Diet Cokes a day. Got to stop doing that.
Quit it. What else is going on? We got a week ahead of us.
We got a new little. A little temporary product for the next 2 weeks.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Chris, do you want to tell everybody?
Oh no, I know the least about it, so I'll let you guys try.
Well, we were trying to figure out the date, but we put out our first batch of t-shirts.
I want to say Grayscale Gorilla t-shirts.
Grayscale Gorilla t-shirts, maybe 3-4 maybe now years ago. And man, they were quite the hit.
They're quite the hit, but it was quite the nightmare on your part. And so I didn't have to deal with it. You guys dealt with it, but those were manually shipped to Grayscale Gorilla. And then in-house Grayscale Gorilla people, including Nick, were like mailing these out, like putting them in packages, putting on labels,
all around the world,
all over the world.
Yeah. So, it was, I should say, let me give you the punchline quickly and I'll go back to the last batch. We currently have t-shirts on sale. Our second batch of t-shirts we've ever made here at Grayscale Gorilla. And, we'll link it up in the show notes and everything if you want to go get it right now. But I did want to tell you, the kind of process of why we ended up where we did with our current t-shirts. And it is because, you know, we had a huge batch, like Chris said, a huge batch of t-shirts a few years ago, and we got those hand, screen printed in Chicago. And everybody ordered them. We kind of did a similar thing. We pre-ordered them send us your size, send us the payment and everything. And then we got a huge batch of t-shirts. And then we also got some extras to kind of hand out at shows and all that stuff. So if you've gotten a Grayscale Gorilla t-shirt in the last 4 or 5 years, whenever that was, those were all made in the same batch. And, you know, we make so many, you know, things that are just not physical products. We just sell, you know, we sell software and we sell training. We sell all these digital bits sometimes.
Yeah, nothing we do is physical.
Right. So when it comes to these physical products, I always like this, you know, this like something that you can purchase and then it's gone. You know, we don't really have exclusive stuff like that as much. So what we did is we used this site called Cotton Bureau, and they do.
Now you're talking about the current ones.
Yeah, now to jump forward to the current one. So, just to fill everybody in with what's going on now, and then we could talk about the old shirts again, because I still have family members and friends, and I still see the old shirts all the time. But the current ones, just so everyone knows, if you guys want to get in on it, it's only up for 2 weeks. So if you're listening to this and you're listening to the podcast a little late, make sure you go check it out, because it's only 2 weeks that they have this open. And you can go to Cotton Bureau. We'll link it up down below. And it's kind of like a Kickstarter for t-shirts. And they do really good work. In fact, I bought a shirt from Austin Kleon, the Steel Like an Artist shirt that he came out with. It was late last year. And I got the same shirt. We ended up using the same type of shirt that he did because the quality was so perfect. That's what kind of turned me on to Cotton Bureau. You go there, you buy a shirt, you buy a hoodie, you buy a shirt for your friend, girlfriend, boyfriend. And then at the end of the run, they do something similar. They print them all, ship them all. They take care of all that stuff. We don't have to do all the shipping in-house anymore.
Thank God.
They are professionals, and they'll get it to you. And the rest is history. So what I should say is, for those of you who do care about this stuff, which I do, they are screened shirts. They're really well done. They're made. You could tell that this company is not just printing whatever. In fact, you have to go through a process just to put your shirt on their site. So we wanted to make sure it was something that we would wear and not just, you know, hey, go buy some swag with our logo on it. So check it out. If you want a comfy t-shirt, they are nice and soft, you know.
Tri-blend.
It's not one of those Hanes beefy tees that you throw in the bottom of your drawer and never.
Man, those are the worst.
Never wear again.
Worst is when you go to like a trade show and they give you, there's always shirts and they're the shitty, can I say that? I was saying shittiest shirts ever, because they're like, number one, they're extra large, and they're that Hanes heavy stuff that you never wear. And I wear a medium. So like they give me an extra large. I mean, it's literally like a nightgown on me. And so I end up just like using it to wax my car or something. And I never wear it, but that's not this case. Our shirts are quality, because, you know, I bootlegged some shirts not too long ago, when I started here at GSG, the shirts were gone, pretty much. And so I needed some swag for, so when I went to Advance, I would have something to wear. And this is the same material, and I've been wearing this kind of material for a while now. It's this tri-blend material. It's super comfy.
You're saying though, you bootlegged some Grayscale Gorilla shirts.
Like, yeah,
you
didn't, I did. Have, you made I didn't your have, own Grayscale I went, Gorilla shirts. I, that's how down I was for the cause. Okay. I went to a site and I made my own shirts and had them printed and sent it to my house. I think I made like five of them, and one of them is actually this one that we're selling now, the script logo, and it's one of my favorites actually. So yeah, check them out, go get them. Sweatshirts too, there's sweatshirts, women's t-shirts,
absolutely.
And the limited edition red color, which we probably will never do that color again. Maybe we will someday, but right now we're going to say never.
No, I like that idea that we will never make the original black on black, you know, logo shirts that we came out with. That's the first batch. And these are the same. These are going to be classic script logo, white on black and white on red. And then the hoodie. And then that this batch will be over. So you could go to the site. You could see it just started today. So it's 2 weeks from now. Is what's the date for everybody? Anybody have a calendar up?
You have 14 days left. We've already sold four, by the way.
February 6th.
Hey, February 6th, folks. So if you're listening to this before February 6th, head on over, because after that, we can't even reorder them. I mean, we're buying these along with you guys to wear ourselves, because there's no
yep.
There's no extras. There's no reorders. There's none of that. So if you guys want...
We won't even have any to give away at shows or anything. So yeah, if you want this, if you want to be one of the special few, this is your only chance.
That's right. Head on over to... we'll have this link up at our website, obviously, but we'll also link it up here on YouTube if you're watching, down in the comments. And if you're listening through the podcast, you can go to our blog, and you'll find all the podcasts there. This is actually episode 47, if that helps you find the notes, and we'll make sure to link that up in the notes. You can go get a shirt, and like Chad says, impress all your 3D friends and confuse all your non-3D friends.
It's just an obscure band you've never heard of.
That's right.
Just think of the fun things you could tell them what Grayscale Gorilla is.
I'm gonna put in my order right after this, but we got that going on. So yeah, tell your friends buy your friend a shirt, really.
Yeah,
let's be honest,
they deserve it
after everything they've done for you. I think
all the times they've bailed you out of jail.
The late night phone calls. Anyway, that's it. Thank you for Cotton Bureau. So we don't have to hand ship over, I think it was over 300 shirts last time.
And you were sending them everywhere. I remember the nightmare of you guys like trying to figure out how to ship to like different weird like Eastern European countries. And like, wait, how do we get this to Russia?
Yeah, we had quite a few of them actually get sent back because... the customs forms in some countries are just like, I don't know. There was so much paperwork just to get it to some people, but Cotton Bureau figures that stuff out for you. And so that's where we're going their route. But we're not skimping on the quality. We're just wimping out on shipping it all to everybody.
Yeah, this will be way more reliable than I imagine.
way faster than we would be.
Yeah, well, it actually says, I was just going to say, it says, I think if you order now, it'll ship by February 20th, which is pretty good considering how many have to get made and all that stuff.
Yeah, I want to say I bought the Steel Like an Artist t-shirt in October, November, and I had it before Christmas, so... they did a good job. Okay, I guess enough about selling some t-shirts here. If you'd like to support us and have some sweet gear to walk around in, head on over there. So I figure, well, first of all, anything else happening on the site? We got a new tutorial coming out tomorrow. We have a Throwback Thursday tutorial coming out Thursday.
Tutorial is tomorrow?
I have one. I've got...
what do you got in store?
What are you talking about?
Ooh, I am going to show you guys my three tips when adding reflections to your scene to make it more realistic. So, as you know, I love reflections. But the, you know, standard default reflections when you just click on reflections on Cinema, the defaults are rarely realistic looking. So I wanted to show you the three things I do on almost every reflection I add in Cinema 4D, and how you could add it to yours and make it look much more realistic. So,
like reflectance, right?
Yeah, in reflectance, these tips actually work in no matter what render you use. I'm going to be using physical and standard render in the tutorial, but it's another short tutorial. We're moving that direction in general in the next few months. A couple of shorter tutorials.
I'm going to resist it, you guys, just so you know.
To what?
Like everybody out there listening.
Say what?
He said he's going to resist it.
But I'm going to make mine longer and longer.
Yeah, don't do that. we need to make shorter tutorials. I mean, the facts are here. I mean, people are more and more busy. There's more and more work, especially if you're working in the industry. You have clients, you have meetings, you have phone calls, you have all this other stuff to do. And we know by the numbers, too, that many of you are looking for specific answers to questions. that can easily, you know, that could easily improve your work in the short amount of time. And we're going to be focusing on a few of those tutorials coming up soon, or at least Chad and I will. And then Chris will make it
fastest. I'm going to do the Micro Machines voice. Like you're going to have to like watch it 10 times to understand what just happened.
I like it.
Luckily, YouTube has the 0.5 speed.
It's going to be like 10 frame GIF kind of.
frame forward.
Oh my God. Yeah. The one second tutorial, you have to hit the little tilde key or whatever it is to frame forward to see the tutorial.
Gotta load it.
I like this idea.
That'd be hilarious.
What's the minimum length YouTube allows you to upload?
Oh boy.
I don't know.
It'd be we'll run 30 second ads before it for a 2 second tutorial.
Totally.
Like, can you upload a single frame video to YouTube? I'm just curious. I have no interest in that, but
a single frame video? Yeah. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it would probably error out or something.
All right, we gotta do some experiments. But keep an eye open for some tutorials coming out. We've been brainstorming quite a few here for the last month or so. So we got some fun ones coming up. And and they'll be all over the spectrum as far as from beginners to, you know, more advanced. But either way, you know, I want to start to give you guys something that's super actionable that you could just put on almost any project that you have that could either speed up your workflow, make it look more realistic, you know, something that you can use every day. So got some of those coming out. And I figured we were brainstorming before we recorded here about kind of a topic, and we've had this topic sitting here on our list for quite a while now, and I think it's about time. And it basically comes down to the idea of mentors. So you guys have you guys had mentors in your career coming through, either online or an actual physical mentor that kind of helped you? Chad, what was your experience with a mentor?
I never had a mentor that was like, hey, I'm your mentor. You know what I mean? But I had people throughout my career that I would consider to be a mentor, whether or not they knew it or not, I guess. I was imagining them as my mentor in this. You know, I'm just kidding. There's people that I looked up to at places that I worked that I watched very carefully on how they did certain things. And, they weren't like people that took me under their wing per se, but I definitely, when I was around them, I could sense that they were really good at what they did. And so I made sure that I watched and learned and tried to absorb as much of their wisdom as I could. And for me, it's been several people, but for live action, when I was doing a lot more live action directorial type stuff, I learned everything I did from Eric Anderson, who was a creative director at DK. And he was a fantastic director, an amazing editor, and just a really smart guy. And when I first started at DK, I was doing a lot of on-set supervision for CG stuff and motion design stuff, and he was directing the live action part. And I'd always had an interest in live action direction back when I was in school. So I would sit there on set when I'm, you know, doing the effects supervision, and I would just watch him direct and like watch what he was doing and watch how he would talk to the actors, watch how he would talk to the crew, and just kind of absorb that. And then, you know, when he would bring the stuff back to, you know, work on it and have people finish it up, I would kind of watch how he treated people and watch how he motivated people to get the good work. And I learned a lot from him about that. I think there's been quite a few people, but I've never had that one person that I've worked for. I've never had a boss, number one, that was a mentor. I'm trying to think back now.
Well, I think what you're saying is pretty common too, Chad. It's rarely, I would say it's almost never a case where you formally get a mentor, right? Like, hello.
It sounds weird to talk about.
Like hello. A big brother.
Like, well, yeah. Will you be my mentor? Or I am being mentored by blah, blah, blah. That doesn't sound like the kind of thing that would happen.
Right. But I think
it does. I think. but I wish it had.
It sounds weird to even conceive of. Can you imagine somebody walking up to you and saying, will you be my mentor? It just seems like something that we don't do.
I mean, if you're a Jedi, it would totally happen.
Well, I think so. It to take a little step back, it's something I mention all the time that I think is one of the fastest ways that you can get better is to not be the best in the room, to surround yourself with people that are better than you are. And in this case, many times these people become a mentor. And like you said, Chad, whether they know it or not, mm-hmm. if you think of even a book or a training series or even a tutorials that we do, it's possible for you to have a mentor that they have no clue who you even are. And that relationship is really about, to me, it seems like that relationship is about emulation and about learning from what they do best and mm-hmm. seeing if it's also a good fit for how you do work. So I guess I just wanted to frame that a little bit as we talk more about this. But Chris, let's
call that the stalker method.
The stalker method. Well, I mean, I'll get into more stories of mentors made such a difference in my life, and I'll share some stories as well. But I wanted to hear kind of early on too. I don't know, Chris, did you have anybody you were looking up to, or that was a more direct mentor, or sideways, like Chad mentioned?
I'm gonna have to speak about it more in like a teacher kind of way, mm-hmm. like that you had certain instructors mm-hmm. that had like a particular style. And for me, I have two different ones. And one would be somebody I've mentioned before, Mike Maddox. And he was the administrator at a school where I was going. And his method was like supreme, like openness, like just enable his students to do what they wanted to do. And like, honestly, like never, like it was like the lightest touch and in like the best way. And he's also like one of my favorite, like in-person kind of philosophers, where he has like all these really unique views on the way the world is and the way people are. And, he was very inspiring in the fact where it was just here, like you guys are talking about doing stop motion animation. Hey, here's a camera you can use. And you know, and there's no pressure. There's not like, hey, how's that? It was never even, how is that project coming? It's just like complete openness to like, oh, you guys are interested in this, try and pursue that. You guys are interested in this, go ahead and try and pursue that. And he just enabled people to do anything they sounded passionate about, which was amazing. But then I had another instructor in a different school, and he was the complete opposite, where he was like, crack the whip, super strict. Here's the assignment. Here's the due date. If you miss it, if you're a minute late, you don't get to turn it in. If you didn't follow the instructions, I throw it out. This instructor, and it was for a life drawing class, actually. Not life drawing, but just kind of a general like design drawing course. And it covered a lot of different topics. And for the final, this is how brutal he was. For the final, he had everybody come in the room, and the final had six parts. You had to turn it. You had to come in and turn in like all these different things. You had like a sculpture and then a poster that you'd drawn of the sculpture, and then concept art of it, and then an environment. There's all these different components of it. And he said, okay, everybody come into the room. He's like, everybody turn in their assignments. Okay, everybody leave the room 5 minutes. Everybody get out. And he kicked everybody out, and 5 minutes later, everybody comes back in. And we enter the room, and he has a pile of stuff on one table and a pile of stuff on the other table. And he goes, everything on this table, I'm not even going to grade. You did not follow the instructions. You didn't turn everything in. Like you failed. That's gone. And it's like, everything over here, we're now going to critique. And like, it was just absolutely brutal. And he was one of my favorite teachers ever, because I don't know. I've got a lot of stuff can rub me the wrong way. And one of the things that rubs me the wrong way is when You like people have double standards on things, where it's like, oh, like, you know, like you didn't do this, but you, I'm having trouble articulating it, but like this guy just had like this absolute, there was no relativity on here. It was like, here's the scale, here's the bar, you're being graded on that. And that pressure and knowing that this guy has high standards, it automatically made me want to try really hard. Like, it was like, I want to try, I want to succeed, I want to not fail to do this. And and it made it so that like this was a competition. Everybody was fighting really hard to do it. But you have other teachers, you have other instructors, other teachers where it's just like, oh, like, I don't know. You get this a lot in school, especially with some art stuff where it's just like, oh, like nothing's wrong. Do whatever you want. Like, oh, you can turn it in late. Like, oh, like this person obviously didn't finish, but we're still going to give them a critique. And when that kind of thing is happening, you don't feel like you have to try that hard. Like you feel like, I can whip something out in an hour and it's going to be better what half the people are doing because they're just not paying any attention or it's just not, they shouldn't maybe even be in this field. Where here it's like, no, this guy you should get weeded out. Like this guy's saying, you want to do concept art, you want to do art, like there's a process here. You have to try hard, you have to put effort in, and you can fail. And I don't know.
All these millennials are like, what?
Yeah, like, and I think that's
fail.
And this might extend it, and I know Nick's got some stories to do, but a direction of extending the topic is that a really harsh kind of teacher or mentor, I think, is so important in this field, in any kind of creative field, I think, because when you're going to school, like, first of all, a lot of schools just take your money and they don't care about how good you are. And here's the thing, like, we're not doctors, we're not lawyers, there's a lot of fields where there are kind of strict tests and you will fail out of it. And you find out very quickly, this isn't for you. If you're going to school to be a doctor, you can find out really quickly, this is not for you. Like I'm failing, or it's the material's too difficult, or who knows what. And they don't finish school. And then only people who should be doctors finish and become doctors. But when it comes to a lot of creative fields, like people maybe doing concept art or mm-hmm. anything, honestly, like video editing, any kind of creative field, a lot of schools will just like put you right through the process. You paid your money. You probably shouldn't graduate, but whatever. We want to keep you in the system. So they just keep pushing you through.
Right.
And then you pop out into the real world and you have no idea what you're doing. And so if you get that brutal teacher that's like, no, the buck stops here. You got to do this quality. Like, no, this does not count. Now, that is a taste of the real world. And that's what you need. And for the half of people in that class that probably didn't pass it, like, and they're just complaining about the teacher and trying to call it out and say, like, this is bullshit. Like, no, those are the people who shouldn't be doing this kind of work. And they should. This is a process of them getting filtered out and being able to stop pursuing this thing or get serious about it. So
yeah, that's a huge, huge talk in itself, like the legitimacy of I don't know what you call them, paid. Some of them are accredited, but there's a whole I went to one of those schools. I went to Columbia College in Chicago, which is not a university. And they're
kind of like a factory school.
It's an open enrollment school. So if you have money, if your check clears, you can go.
You're in.
You described about, I'd say 75% of the classes that I was in was a bunch of people that didn't know where else to go in terms of their career, their life. So they ended up going to, I'm going to be an animator. I'm going to be a filmmaker. I'm going to be this, because they just didn't have anything else to do. And I like films. And then they realize, that, some teachers were like the ones that you described that were hard and wanted you to actually do well. And then there was the other ones that were just like, they're collecting a paycheck and would pass you no matter what, even if you showed up or not. And I agree with you. I think that you do need somebody early in your career, earlier in your maybe it's your college career, to give you a taste of that reality, because that reality is coming whether you know it or not. And the sooner you learn it, the easier it'll be on yourself, and you hopefully will maybe save some money in the process. But I know Nick's got a lot to say on this topic, so I'll let him.
No, I this is great to hear everyone's stories. I definitely learned a lot from my mentors, and I think what you're describing with the education system too is even a part of it I didn't really think of, but definitely the getting that experience of like tough love early on prepares you so much for clients and for like real world stuff. Like when a client's paying you, they sometimes are not gonna say like, oh well, good job, but maybe next time. They want it done. So I think that might even be a discussion on its own that we could jump into. when I originally wrote this down in the topics, it was right after I watched the movie Whiplash, which got me, which is always it's the drumming movie. I always forget the name of.
That's because the movie, the name doesn't go with the subject, I think. It's just the name of the song in it.
Just a song. But,
man, what a great movie.
What a great movie. And what it reminded me of are the real tough-ass mentors that I've had through my career that did push me, that made me feel like I've always learned the fastest when those characters showed up in my life and they said, hey, you're not as good as you think you are. And they also said things like, also some more positive things like, I know you could do better than this. You're phoning this in. And, I know I've seen you do better and I want you to. There's also been teachers that say, I know you've learned, they wouldn't cut me slack that I was ahead of the class sometimes. Like, I learned After Effects before I went to school. But I still had to take some of these After Effects courses. Some teachers would go, oh, well, Nick already knows this. And some teachers would go, I don't care what you know. You need to make something better tomorrow than you made yesterday. And I've always appreciated that in my teachers. I've always appreciated that in friends of mine even. And to me, what immediately popped in my head were a few people. But one was one of the first teachers I had when I went to college. And his name was Chuck. And it was this class that was kind of a generic design class. It was like, let's learn all about design and about terms and about making stuff and critique and all this stuff. Day one, he was kind of like the teacher that you described, Chris. He's like, everyone's going to cut their own mat board and put their own work in the middle of the mat board. And if you're off by a quarter inch, you fail. If you, I'm going to give you all the specific, typefaces that you have to use. And if you use anything that's off by half a point, you're going to fail. And he went down this list of like, you are currently in the toughest class in this entire school right now. And you do not want to mess with me. And if you do anything wrong, you will fail. And I kind of secretly was like, okay, like I didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't go in as a designer. I didn't go in as a person that wanted to be an artist. I literally liked playing with computers. And this guy was yelling at me about typefaces, about stuff I had no clue about. But I was excited. I was like, yeah, like I could learn this stuff, And the next day he came in and he was much more chill. He was like really friendly. Hey, how's everybody doing? What's up? Hope you had a good weekend, all this stuff, whatever it was. And he goes, hey, I just wanted to let you guys know I'm a really tough teacher and I'm going to hold you to some really high standards. But what I mostly did there was scare off all the wimps. And you could look around now and see about a third of the class dropped my class. And he goes, sure. I don't want them in my class. Huh. And I go, I love this man. I love him. Like, this is my hero. And that turned out to be one of my favorite courses. I learned so much. It just in general about I don't need to get into the course, but that kind of character, that kind of person that holds people to a standard, that likes to teach, but does not just let people through. I've always learned the most by them, and it's tough too. Like it was a tough class. Like I was up late. I definitely worked harder, but that movie got me thinking about. Is that how everyone – the real question for me thinking about that and thinking about it in context of this topic is, does everyone need to learn like that? Does everyone need that really tough mentor person to kind of like boot camp you into shape? Or do some people, learn a little bit differently? Because I've actually had this conversation about that movie, which is – some people say that's not the way to teach. The way to teach is to be a little bit more compassionate, a little bit more you could do it. But in my experience, I've pushed through more and learned more when I had the more strict teachers and the more even hard ass, like jerks sometimes. Like I really, really loved that movie and how much of a jerk he was and how much the artist got out of that. So I don't know. Do you guys have a stance on that?
I think that that movie for me, I can't. I personally thought that he was a jerk, and I didn't see any. I didn't see any redeeming factors in his methods. Even if that kid became like the best drummer in the world, I would consider it tainted by the fact that the way that that guy was treating him. I think that you can achieve this. You can push people. And I've had lots of people work for me that I lead by example and push them with honesty and not with insults and with intimidation and methods that I think are unhealthy, both developing trust between you and the person you're mentoring and your ability. Like I feel like the guy in the movie, I forget his name, the jerk guy, but he was almost like, it was like him pushing. It was him using the excuse of pushing people to be the best they could be to create the next Miles Davis or whatever it was. But really, he was filtering his own insecurities and his own issues onto this kid, onto this class. And I think that my style, whenever I have people working for me, is not to yell at them and swear at them and whatnot. But I have been told that I can be mean, and I don't ever consider myself mean, but I've had people tell me when I do like employee reviews or whatever that they're super intimidated by me, and my wife has told me, you're an intimidating person, and I don't think of myself as an intimidating person. I'm a small guy. I'm like not intimidating, but I am very honest. And so when you bring me work, when you're working with me on a project, if you bring me work that I don't think is good, I'm going to tell you that it's not good. And I'm going to tell you why it's not good. And I'm going to tell you how to make it better. And if I give you praise, it's because you'll know you deserve the praise. You'll know that it's because you did a good job. It's not because
biggest part of it. I love that.
Yeah. Because I remember a producer at a studio that I worked said to me, an artist was showing, you know, we were doing our walkthroughs, and I was looking at what everybody was doing for the day. And one artist showed me something, and I thought it was okay. And my producer thought it was much better than okay. And he pulled me aside afterwards, and he's like, you didn't even tell him good job. You didn't even give him a pat on the back. And I said, he'll know when it's time, and he'll know when I do that, how much that will mean. Because it's not there yet. And when it's there and he gets it there, then I'm going to give it to him and say, you really went above and beyond and made this amazing. And that's on you. You did that. And that'll be much more of an effective motivational tool than me every day saying, good job, keep going. And it's about honesty and a little bit of, you know, just a smidge of that hard ass. I guess I have it naturally. I'm just a jerk, I guess, from what my wife says. But yeah, and it's funny. Like I'm that way with my kids too. And it's not really. It just comes naturally. It's not something that I'm. You're all probably thinking like, God, this guy's a real jerk. But my kids will show me a drawing, and I think where most parents would be, this is the best drawing. Oh my God, this is so amazing. And you're so good at this, that I'm the guy who will be like, that's really good. But you know, you can work on the shading right here. And I think you might be able to bring some of this out. And they, my wife just shakes her head. Like, God, you can't just say that it's good. Like what's your problem? Like really? Like, come on. But I'm just not that person. I cannot let that stuff go. And I don't know. It's just in my DNA. Like if you show me something that I think that you could do better, I'm going to see if I can make you do it better. That's how I am.
It's that is really a part of this debate too, is as I teach more and as I learn the right way to discuss, you know, how to help the next generation, you know, get better. I run into this problem all the time, which is I tend to be more positive and you could do it, especially early on. I think mainly because I always imagine that there's all these like parents and brothers like yelling at them not to go be an artist. So I like take it upon myself to be their like cheerleader for the moment. But eventually you need that honesty to go, okay, you can do it, but this isn't quite, you're not there yet, but it comes with more doing. Like it comes with more right. practice. And there's that, those two different sides of teaching that is might be delicate to get both.
Well, there's an introduction you can make to someone, getting them into to light that spark. They might have that spark, but it's not a full flame yet. You know, they think they might want to be an artist of some kind or an animator or whatever. And like, you're the guy that's like, they're, you know, stoking the flame and making it grow. I think it's important though, once people make that decision that they want it to become a career, that there's no easy road in life.
The gloves come off at that point.
Yeah. You know, there's no easy road in life. And that's something that, you know, you have to go, any profession that is a serious profession takes time, and there's no shortcuts. There's no back door to success. You have to work, and you have to have the work ethic. And it's the people that can put their nose down, listen to feedback, and really give it their all that are going to excel. And that kind of transcends motion design, I think. But I mean, like you guys both told stories that were like a class that somebody was going to make you work harder than anybody else and hold you to a higher standard. And you both liked it because you knew that deep down somewhere, you knew that's what it was going to take to be good. And that's what's that. I like seeing that you guys have that same story in common, because that's reassuring to me as someone that I think I myself am sort of like those teachers, maybe not as clever as the guy that had the two piles, but I wish I would have had that one. But yeah,
these all fail.
I do think that's really important, man. Find those people that will be honest with you and really try to make that. And don't be a jerk. And usually the rule of thumb I found is like, you always have to start with one. If you want to motivate an artist to do good work, start with something good and then work your way into the critique. Always try to, you know, not always be Mr. Negative or Mrs. Negative and say, you know, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, you could do better. You know, start it off with something like, I see what you were trying to do here, and I like where you were going with this. Like, this idea here, this is working. Let's build off that. You know?
Yeah, if I can. I'm picturing it now kind of like there's a spectrum. Let's say there's a class of 100 people. And you can have the super-duper nice teacher who is like, okay, everybody, like, you did a great job. Let's put everybody gets a gold star. And you are going to bring 100 people all the way through the process. And like, if your goal is to bring 100% of the people through the process, that should be what you do. But then, you know, I think when Nick and I are talking about kind of these hard ass teachers, you know, 75% of that class is not going to like them. They are going to get harsh critiques. Now we're talking maybe 25% of the people get through, but that 25% of people really got something out of it. And then when you talk about the movie Whiplash, you're now talking about like the ultimate hard ass, and only one person can get through that class, but that one person is going to get the ultimate result. So it's almost like it's more like, where do you want to fall on that spectrum of, do you want to go through the crucible and come out the other side having survived?
Knowing there will only be one.
You want to be in the room with 100 people and they all get a gold star. And now when you get a gold star, you don't know if you're any better than anybody else. And, you know, you try really hard. You know for a fact this person next to you did not try very hard, and you both get the same praise. So, like, I mean, I don't think there's a right answer here, but I don't think anybody wants to be in that class of 100 where everybody's right. happy. I don't know, unless you're that.
Unfortunately, that is the majority of classes.
Yeah, I think the
majority of classes are taught that way, where 100% of people are going to get the gold star and they're going to get through the course.
Right. And that's that. You boiled it down kind of perfectly. Like what? And maybe this is a larger discussion about education and the state of the classroom and as it relates to our industry. But what I think a good question to ask any school or teacher is, what is the goal, teacher? Like, is your goal to push all, you know, 50 of us in the door and out the door in the next semester, or is your goal to try to get as many of us to a level in which we can succeed professionally in this area? Or is your goal to find one of us and let us become the next, you know, I don't know, insert famous designer, motion designer name here. Most of them will probably say, if they're put under pressure, the second one, because that's the most that everybody wants to hear. But it is true. Like, you have to look at these schools like the, some of these like, what are some of the schools that are more like pay to play kind of a thing? That's the, Art Institute of Illinois. And I think they have a few others. There's talented people coming in and out of there because there's just talented people in the world that will succeed, based off their own work ethic and their own abilities. But yeah, you gotta, if I could go back in time and like do school over again, I might be, well, I know I'd be a lot more picky in like what school I went to and what program I was going to be involved with and really ask those kinds of questions. Like, what are you, how many people have gone on to professional careers that took this course?
Think the other part of this is I didn't have a lot of those teachers. I could think of maybe three that really, really pushed me that I went to school that were actual teachers at the school. I think part of what I'm mentioning about this idea of a mentor is not relying on your school to always find that person for you. And the idea that you can, no matter where you are, find a mentor to either critique you directly or to use as a ruler to always compare your own work to and say, mm-hmm. I'm not there yet. And I think we're maybe jumping off path from physical mentor to like mental mentor, but I think it all hits the same thing, which is I'm imagining some of our listeners like, okay, maybe they didn't go to school. Maybe they don't work at a place where they're surrounded by all these other artists. This mentor idea, I think, can be done no matter where you are, but it does take a certain sense of either being tough on yourself or finding somebody to do that. Like for me, it took until like actually meeting you, Chad. You were very helpful in my career. I looked up to you and you know what you knew, and you were willing to be honest with me and say, hey, that's not as good as this thing over here that you could do, you know, and you've always been direct with me. And it took me to go find these people and work next to them. And in some cases, when it comes to other things that I'm interested in, I have mentors that have no clue who I am. And I just read their books and I saw that a higher standard was possible. And I held myself to that standard. So I don't know if I'm like complicating the issue, but
no, I think it's a good point. Like how I think maybe I take my experience for granted a little bit because I was in a company sitting next to people that were my, you know, mentors in certain areas. And then I was mentoring other people, but we were all in a room together for 10 hours, 12 hours a day. And there's a lot of people out there that don't have that work remotely, that freelance and are at different studios all the time. How do they find that?
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's something I struggle with, and it's something we've tried to solve a couple different ways here, even one with 5-second projects where we put out kind of a fake brief mm-hmm. for everybody and then had people submit a 5-second animation. And then also part of it, and not everybody did this, but many people, I would say, if you are going to submit, you also have to go in and give, you know, honest critique to other people. And at least then you're getting some sort of like, you know, something you could do better next time. You know, I even said it like you have to go say two nice things and one negative thing about every project that you watch.
Compliment sandwich.
Yeah, compliment sandwich. Good, bad, good. Like go in and say what you liked, what could be better, and then what you liked. And But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the right answer for those people that are the only ones in their office, or the 3D person, or the creative person that's in their office, or even in their town, or, you know.
I know, it's tough. I can't.
Well, I mean, a lot of this is like, I think of like the idea of a mentor. I know we're kind of using a very broad definition of mentor here. Like, not to, this isn't the traditional sense of where like you're literally, you know, somebody's assistant and mirroring their stuff,
or that's like, you know, apprentice,
you're working with Leonardo, right, and you've got your easel next to his, like, you know, it's not that. So this is very broad, but even that, this is just one potential tool in your toolbox of a way of like improving. And like, but I mean,
it can give you like so much experience in such a, you know what I mean? Like, you could learn, you could like fumble your way through your career on your own or freelancing, but 1 year with someone that knows how to invoice, knows how to talk to clients, knows how to get what they want out of this and this design, you know what I mean? Like, that type of like learning, it's like condensed and like,
oh, that's the best.
It really is. And I wish maybe somebody out there will comment with like their method, as a remote artist or freelancer, like what they do. Maybe it's the meetups that you guys have been part of.
I've always suggested meetups, and, you know, even in small towns, to try to get somebody creative around you to talk about these things, even to just talk about this in general, not to even have a mentor, but to say, to brainstorm and think, and maybe even learn about an artist that you now are in love with, that you look up to, and say, wow, like, that work is amazing. I need to be better so that I could be them one day. Like, even that, I think, falls under some sort of mentor. In a way, the work of MK12 was my mentor for a long time, because I just constantly looked at what my keyframes looked like, what my animation and my design looked like, and looked at their work. And I said, still got a long way to go. Still got a long way to go. Still got a long way to go. Like, still doesn't look at all like their stuff. So I don't know. Maybe you're right. Like, Chris, we're stretching the term a little wide, but I think it just comes to me, it's important because it's getting better. How do you get the right tools? And I also like that you said, you know, get the right tools in your tool belt to get better at whatever you're trying to do. So I don't know. Is there anything actionable you think that somebody out there that might not be able to, or maybe they are able to be around these people and be around a mentor? Any like tips that can help somebody out there? That's like,
I think you should go, even if you live in like the most remote area of the country, save up your money and go to a conference. Like, find a conference that you're interested in that you think is going to have a bunch of like-minded individuals. Save up some money, go to the conference with a goal of meeting someone that you can go home and chat online with and send your work to, and somebody hopefully that you admire. And try to build a relationship like that. And don't force it, obviously, but I think that would be very useful. I in fact, when I went to NAB for the first time with Grayscale Gorilla last year, I met three people that I talked to pretty regularly. Trevor Kerr is one of them, and I talk to him all the time. We critique each other's work, and we have a good relationship like that. So even now, in my career, I still do that. And it just kind of happens naturally, because when I find people that I think are talented and motivated and are doing something interesting that I've maybe not seen, I'm like drawn to those people. And I want to maintain relationships with those types of people, because those are the types of people that inspire me. So do that. Find a conference. That's my advice.
Chris, any thoughts about this, about somebody out there that is looking to get better that might not have that mentor they can meet at school or even at work right now?
I mean, I guess my, like, it goes against the topic, but like, I feel like you shouldn't get bogged down on the idea of a mentor too much, because there's other methods to go about doing these kind of things. You know, like you were saying, Nick, you were looking at MK12 stuff. Like I often, especially back in the day, I would just jump onto like CG Talk or something where there's an aggregate of a bunch of artists. And I would just look at all of the work and be like, wow, I've got a long way to go. And I mean, and I was interested in everything. I'm interested in drawing. I'm interested in digital painting. I'm interested in like 3D stills. I'm interested in animation. I'm interested in character animation. I'm interested in short films. And I would look at these things and get like inspiration overload. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to keep that kind of thing in mind. And also as a check, because if you got like a big ego, you just go someplace where you see everybody else is a lot better. And then hopefully that inspires you to want to try harder and not give up.
Yeah, I think that's good. I'm imagining, you know, it's actually a lot of Derek Sivers references today, but there's this concept of practicing, there's a concept of practicing that is if you sit down and you just do what you do best, and you make something that you could have made a month ago, and it's even if it's beautiful, you're really not learning anything. And there's this concept of, I forget actually what they call it, but it's specific practice or something like that, where you can actually force yourself to go mess up for an hour until you learn something you couldn't do an hour ago. And I think that process, no matter where that comes from, whether it comes from a mentor, whether it comes from looking at work that's better than yours and you're frustrated that yours doesn't look that good, if it comes from a somebody really mean, if it comes from somebody being very nice, whatever gets you into that mode of I have to go do this thing that I'm not good at until I am good at it, whatever gets you into that mode, go find more of that. And maybe that's really the key, is everyone comes to that place differently. Some need more handhold and you could do it. Some need more, that's the ugliest thing I've ever seen, go do it again. And like I liked, but whatever gets you into that mode of, seeing yourself progress like in a fast amount of time, man, not only it's such an enlightening day when you can get through that and you see the work that you did that you didn't even know was possible, man, it's a bright day in my book when that stuff happens. I'm thinking specifically about somebody that might not know that they were my mentor, but Noah, he was always so hard on my work specifically, and almost in a way like Whiplash was. I learned so much from him, and to bring it back to you, Chad, when he finally, after years of working with him, after years of him going, not good, you could do better, that's not going to make the cut, well, we're not putting your piece in the edit, like the client hates it, like this is the language. After years of that, he finally hovered over my shoulder one day and he goes, hey, Nick, good job, man. And he walked away and I'm like sobbing in my chair, like pride, with like, I passed the Noah test. I did it. And that moment was worth, that's why that movie meant so much to me. Like that moment was worth so much to me because I knew I wouldn't be, I learned so much just from forcing myself to try to make someone else happy. But that was me. So find whatever that is for you that pushes yourself to not just do the same thing over and over again, which we're all guilty of. I know I am, but to actually push yourself through. And I think that's growth, baby. That's how this whole game works.
That's growth, baby.
That's growth. That's growth, baby. Being human is about growing.
That is true.
Well, I didn't mean for it to wrap up so nice.
That was like a good wrap up. I mean, yeah, I feel like we should stop now.
Yeah, it's done. And we're at the right time. So bye bye, everybody.
Does it negate the wrap up if I say that it went well? I think it takes it away a little bit. Like self-referential. It's like a fourth wall kind of situation.
I think we're at the right time. I think we covered everything. We hope everybody out there got something out of this.
Hey, if you have any suggestions, if you have a story about your mentor, if you'd like to thank them, I would say go thank them. If you'd like to write a note for us about your story, about how you learn And actually, that's a great question. How do you guys learn best? When do you find yourself in that mode of, man, I really learned a lot in the last month. It's because of what? Was it self-motivation? Was it a mentor? Was it watching a movie? Was it
a
big project that got dropped on your head that you didn't think you could do? What motivates you to get a little bit better every day? And that might be a good discussion in YouTube comments and over at our blog as well. So I think we're at a good time. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. Thank you guys for joining in that one. I think we should come back to this one. I think this idea of mentor kind of jumps into a lot of different things that might be interesting for people that are trying to get better out there. I'm going to put it back on the topics list. We might have to jump in. So thanks again, guys. Don't forget about the t-shirts that are out now, and we'll see you in another episode of the Grayscale Gorilla podcast very soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.